Words Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations. I'm Dizzy here to welcome you at the top. Couple things you should know. Number one, we're Catholic. You don't have to be to listen along, but you also should know that we are sweary, potty mouth, foul people.
There's some anger deep inside. Sometimes it comes out.
It's probably our charism, verbally. If we're honest. Yeah. And also, we are Catholic, as I said, but we also are a little bit blasphemous, a tad heretical. We like to explore things with abandon. So
yes.
If you don't...
I think abandon is the key word rather than a and bit yet, and tad.
Oh my gosh, here's the best abandoned. Transition. We're still here though.
Here we
Even
are.
Even though we explore with abandon, we have not gotten totally lost.
This is true.
I don't know. Anyway, I'm joined as always by my co-host, Guess, who
hello.
Sipping on something delicious. What are you drinking, Guess?
I'm having a lovely glass of Primitivo. I figured red wine was an appropriate choice for... the end, kind of, in quotation marks, of season two.
If what you can call seasons, what
if,
we do.
If we have seasons, this is the sort of end of one, kind
sure.
of. And we're going to be talking about some of our favorite stuff about the church. Like, we're going to be telling a little bit of our story.
Yeah.
And certainly one of my favorite things about the church is the fact that they give you free booze every time
every
you go to Mass.
Every Sunday.
Yeah.
Or more.
Yeah. Like, show up, free booze. It's a good thing. So
I've heard it's not quite as sweet as it used to be. It's very rare that I... We'll partake of both species.
Oh, geez. There it is. The blasphemy's already coming out.
No, it's perfectly fine. You only need one species.
Depends on who you talk to.
Okay. According to the catechism.
All right. Well, according to the catechism. Which one? The Baltimore one? The Baltimore one? Because that's the only real one.
No, the real one. The only one. The big one.
Yeah. Okay.
It's searchable online.
The big
did you
one.
Know that?
The real one. Yeah, I didn't know, actually.
The big real one.
The real one is
bringing it
online.
Back. The CCC.
CCC. So,
oh my gosh.
A little red wine to remind us of our favorite things. And it looks like you are sniffing and sipping and enjoying the same.
I was trying to calm myself
with
the bouquet of this Primitivo, which is really nice, actually.
It's delightful.
So today we're talking about our story and within the faith story. And we thought we'd start with some of our histories, because maybe you haven't heard some of those. Not that you would care, but it does explain a little bit more, perhaps.
Well, it's kind of funny, right? Because we set out on this whole church drunkenness thing a few months ago. Actually, it was probably about a year ago that we started kind of talking about it. Yeah, like planning.
Yeah.
And then we did Lent and managed to power through that. And now here we are at the end of season two. And we haven't really just kind of done an episode where it's like, here we lay out kind of how we got to here and a little bit more about us. You know, we've talked about a lot of other things, and I'm sure that people probably know more about us than they really care to know.
Once again, wild abandon. We haven't been holding back.
Yeah.
But we are kind of ending this segment of episodes, this little mini season that we do.
So
and we'll,
maybe it's time to connect some dots.
Yeah, we can't probably stay away for All Saints and All Souls. So you might see us pop up then.
There may be a bonus episode.
And we're thinking about coming back for Advent. So... if you exist, listener, and would like...
if you're out there.
Hello! This would be a great time to rate us or send us an email and say, what you like, what you don't. Should
let
we come
us
back
know.
For Advent?
Absolutely.
And if we do, what would you like to hear about?
What do you want to hear about? Send us some ideas. We've got a few things. Advent will at least give us a little more guidance than ordinary time.
We're sick of ordinary time.
Ordinary time sucks.
I think we're done.
Turns out. Yeah.
Turns out.
So if you guys have things that you would love to hear about, ideas for future programs, then hit us up with an email. Send us a message via the comments on the blog at churchdrunk.com.
Or churchdrunk@gmail.com.
churchdrunk@gmail.com. That's
our
email.
Yep.
Tweet us at churchdrunkpod.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or rate us.
Or
I guess,
send a carrier pigeon.
Yeah. If you think that we suck,
whisper
then be like,
to your guardian angel.
These guys totally suck. And then we'll look at the rating and be like, okay.
We know we suck.
My spirit is crushed, but whatever.
Drink more wine.
Drink more wine. That's part of what we love about the church.
Church drunk.
So, hit us up with ideas for season three. As we kind of wrap out season two, we wanted to give you guys that heads up. But today, whenever you're listening, it's time for us to kind of unravel the twisted spool of Dizzy and Guess and try and figure out how we got to where we're at.
And maybe jog your mind about some of your firsts as
well.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we've got this little bowl sitting in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
It's got all these little slips of paper that we had prepared.
Yep.
That's the sound of slips of paper. I don't know if you can hear it.
I think sound effects are fun.
It's there.
Yeah.
It's like an old-time radio show here on Church Drunk. And
gather around the radio.
And then the thunder.
Burr.
But... on each slip of paper, we've got a first. So you're going to be hearing the story of our firsts, and we'll just draw one randomly. We both kind of work together. So some of them we totally know what we're going to say. Some of them we've got no idea, and we were kind of scowling at each other as we were putting them into the big bowl. But it'll be, you know, like our first kiss with the church, or our first... Wait, no, that was just me? Father O'Flaherty.
I'm just biting my tongue so hard right now.
Yeah, so was he.
Oh, God!
That didn't happen. That's that didn't happen, said. For the record.
All right,
and
let's
I'm sorry if it happened
God
to you.
Bless us.
Pick here. A slip. Stop me.
God, take a sip of wine. Again, my life advice, everyone. Take a sip of wine. Communion wine. Regular wine.
What'd you get?
Hey, first memory of being in church.
Well, first memory of being in church.
Okay, little guess. What's your first memory of being in church?
Oh, you didn't pick that for yourself? That was me?
Oh, no, I'll
you
tell
pick
you.
For me?
You know what? I actually have a good memory. Well, not a good memory, but I have a memory of this because I was, like, kind of unchurched until I was about 10.
Okay.
I mean, like, they got me baptized and everything.
Okay, so you weren't a full-on pagan baby.
No.
Okay.
I was what you call an apostate.
Yeah.
Because I was baptized as an infant. And then, like, never came back until I was 10, like in fourth grade, and I ended up at a Catholic school. And so I think one of my earliest, like, real church memories is, like, during the school day, like how they would do and, like, take you all to church for something. And I wasn't allowed to really participate because I hadn't made my first communion, but I was, like, past the age where you should, right? It's like fourth grade. And so it was actually kind of like a bad experience because I just felt really like the new kid at a small school. And like I wasn't allowed to like do what everybody else is doing. And like people were like, why isn't she doing this? And it was awkward at best.
Yeah.
But I did go to like after school classes that year and made my sacraments. And then I was like accepted, I guess.
Accepted.
The church is super welcoming to 10-year-old kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. So but I do remember being interested.
Yeah.
It was a cool thing to see.
Yeah.
Do you have a first church
well,
memory?
Yeah, I mean, my first church memory is Cheerios. Like, no joke. Yeah, like, hanging out.
Bribery.
Yeah, like, you know, being the youngest, it was like, just keep him quiet, you know? And so I remember eating Cheerios in church, and the reason I remember Cheerios is because I spilled them everywhere. And, like dumped the bag out. And we didn't have carpet in my church as a child. We had, like, a concrete floor in the church, and it just scattered everywhere. You, like, you could hear it, you know? I mean, churches are quiet, right? So you heard these Cheerios hit the floor and just go, like, all across. It sounded like this.
You know, guess we've been trying to work with
thunder.
Him on clapping.
Like
and
thunder.
I think he's found an alternative. Somebody's, like, listening to their headphones and are like, that's it. I'm done.
I'm done. I'm out of here.
Sorry, guys.
But, yeah, and I remember, like, my mom being really upset because I had spilled all the Cheerios and stuff. Yeah.
I mean, you were not the first child, so you probably should have known that was
going to happen. Jesus probably spilled Cheerios all over the synagogue.
Jesus loved Cheerios.
Yeah, all over the temple.
All right, why don't you pick one now?
Let's see, what do we got? Mine says, first Catholic inspiration.
That's a good one, maybe.
So how are we doing this? Is it really just the person who pulls it, or do we both answer it? I don't know.
I think we both would like to maybe share this one, or do you not have anything?
Are
you trying to deflect? I mean, you have lots of Catholic inspiration.
Yeah, no, I was just wondering. The rules of the game is all.
Well, you can set the rules.
Okay.
Probably should have talked about this before.
Damn it. Planning. Not a strong suit.
Drink more wine.
No, I think that my first Catholic inspiration... Now, when we had done this category, we kind of talked about, like, you know, artists and writers and stuff like that, right? So there's an inspiration in my personal life, but really, like, the first... like, famous Catholic that really inspired me was St. Francis.
Okay.
I think that's where a lot of Catholics start, actually, is with St. Francis of Assisi.
Yeah, he's a popular one.
And I'm such, like, an outdoorsy type, you know? I mean, I just love... I've always connected with God through nature, so when I found out there was a saint that was, like, specifically for that, I was like, oh, St. Francis, like, that's my jam. It was around the same time that I was kind of getting to know, like, my namesake saints, you know? And so it's, like, I felt kind of bad because all of a sudden St. Francis, like, knocked him down a peg, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh... That's kind of lame for those guys, but St. Francis became like my main man.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, still is in some ways.
You know, my non-Catholic husband, Mr. Dizzy, really has a devotion to St. Francis, which it's been kind of cool to watch.
Yeah.
But I actually would have to say, like, scriptures would be like my first like Catholic inspiration. Like, I always just loved the stories, and I think I was like a literary book nerdy kid anyway. But like. Definitely liked the stories, and those aren't maybe necessarily Catholic, but even like the gospel stories, you know, like I like the story.
Right.
That's my hook.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily under the title of Catholic inspiration, but in terms of like the first kind of like semi-secular kind of inspiration that I remember getting, you know, being like, wait, mm-hmm. you can just read a book and it can actually make you think, like, was C.S. Lewis, you know? I mean, I loved reading, like, Narnia when I was a kid, and then to find out that he had other writings that mm-hmm. were, that were like, deeply spiritual and that could help you kind of unravel the whole mystery of faith was really kind of cool.
And I think he's one that gets, like, appropriated by Catholics. Like, totally. He's close enough to Catholics. Right. Like, oh, yeah, Lewis, of course. Yeah. You know, he's in the Catholic fold.
Lewis and Tolkien basically just end up accidentally switching teams. Like Tolkien kind of is, like, more universally, you know, Christian, whereas C.S. Lewis really, I think, has, like, a place in the Catholic heart for some reason.
I've never met, like, anybody who doesn't consider him, like, canon. Yeah,
totally.
All right, one more? Mm-hmm. Maybe more than one more? Let's see.
Keep going. Keep rolling.
I'm gonna swish it around a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. This one. First experience of, quote unquote, a real prayer.
Yeah, air real quotes. Prayer. Not one of those fake prayers.
Yeah.
So, what was it? What was your first real prayer?
You know, I've actually been pretty lucky in prayer, I feel, in my life. Like, I've had a few experiences that felt so kind of intense to me that they sustained me for a long time.
Right.
And I had one in high school around the time I was being confirmed, but not in any formal event. And it was actually a nature praying. And I just felt like this intense, like, connection in prayer.
Yeah.
And it really did sustain me for, like, even today, I look back at it, like, I can't quite feel the feeling anymore, but I remember how it felt to me. And it was just this sense of, like, great connection and that, like, God was real.
Yeah.
That was my first, like, true prayer experience. I can remember where I was, like, our, location was outdoors and it was just awesome.
So if you started in 10th grade at Catholic school, like, you skipped the whole years where they,
fourth
like,
grade.
Make you,
oh, four, I was 10 years old.
10 years old, right. Yeah, 10 years old. Yeah. You skipped, like, a lot of the, like, memorization of, like, the Our Father and the Hail Mary. Because I remember doing that in, like,
I had to,
like,
do that
First Communion
in CCD.
Prep. Okay.
And after school. And the fourth grade, the school I went to, you had to memorize the creed. And you had to recite it out loud to the nun teacher.
Oh,
like,
my.
Like, during class.
Oh, my.
There was a lot of shame in my early Catholic year. I will say that I got the full Catholic shame guilt thing going because I felt really out of place.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until probably later, confirmation age, when I actually kind of had that ownership, and then much later, the real conversion.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But seeds were definitely planted a little later. Yeah.
Makes sense.
How about
you? Well, I think my first real experience of prayer was realizing that my early prayers were shit. Like, the first time that I understood what prayer was.
Memorizing prayer doesn't just make it happen.
Well, not even that. Like, I remember as a little kid praying for, like, God to change the world, right? Like, dear God, please, like, fix the, you know, grandpa's terminal cancer. Like, dear God, please cure this person, fix this thing. And I thought I was praying, like, so hard. Yeah. And later on, I had an experience where, like, you know, there was a real sort of God moment. And I was like, oh my God, like, those weren't even prayers, you know, like, sitting there and as a little kid, you know, you understand the world as a child and you have to kind of let go of that. And that was the first time that I really had, like, an authentic conversation with God God being like, listen, all right, we're going to have to move past this if we're going to get anywhere. And I listened, and that was the first time where instead of just, like, talking and asking for things, I was listening to God.
But that's how little kids are. Like, in any relationship, like, little children are going to be takers. Like, it takes a while to get empathy and listening
and
skills.
If you're going to grow, you have to pop the bubble, right? And your bubble just kind of grows, and it gets bigger.
Yeah.
But, like, at some point, you have to kind of let go of that view. And some people never do.
No, and, you know, actually, as we were thinking about this, like, there are people who have, like, mapped out the different, like, levels or, like, stages of faith. Like there's Westeroff and there's Fowler. There's the big two.
Right.
But, like, how you progress. And you're right. Some people do just stay in the, like,
I just am going to stay where
I'm nominally this faith. I'm never going to go deeper or I'm going to go away entirely.
Or I have this, like, supposedly incredibly intense sense of understanding that God is going to fix everything for me. You know, and it's like, that's not God. Like, that's not what God does. God asks more of us than just waving a wand. Like, pray hard enough and I will wave my wand and make your life better.
That, you know, if you're really going to live and hold that style of faith, they're going to they're gonna just hit each other eventually, too quickly, it crumbles.
Yeah,
and then you're left. You either grow from that and decide, okay, it's more complicated and deeper, or you're like, forget this.
Totally.
You know, and you're out.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Another one. Let's keep going.
Keep going.
We kind of already talked about that one.
He's just throwing them out now. Yeah. It's not even a game anymore.
That's dumb. Let's see. Oh, there it is. There's one that I was looking for. The first thing that you had to chuck into the fuck it bucket in your Catholic life. Now, this could be the first thing that you looked at and said, you know what? It's hard for me to, like, get on board with this, but fuck it. I'm on board. Like, I just will figure out how. Or it could be the first thing where you say, you know what? It's hard for me to get on board for that. So I'm going to throw it in the fuck it bucket. I'm going to chuck that in the fuck it bucket and not worry about it and say I'm still Catholic even though I don't believe that, right? So there could be either way. Is anybody else just
imagining an actual bucket with, like, the label on it? Like, I feel like we all need that in our lives.
Oh, yeah.
Just side note, like, I would like an actual fuck it bucket.
Yeah. No, that's the thing. Like, Mrs. Guess and I are like, you know what? You need to put on your big boy or big girl pants right now and chuck it in the fuck it bucket and move on. Yeah.
Life mottos. Okay, so... Yeah. I didn't have to think too hard about this one. Do you want to start?
No, go for it. It is my turn to start.
It is your turn.
It is my turn to start. I think the first thing, if I remember, the very first thing that I had to chuck in the fuck it bucket was the idea that women could not be priests. So that one, for whatever reason, that was like an early thing that struck me as like unjust, like not fair.
Yeah. How early do you think you were?
I mean, this was probably like middle school-ish, you know, like fifth, sixth grade.
Such a progressive feminist guess. I'm so proud of him.
It wasn't even that. It was just, I mean, I guess it is.
I don't know. You can label it that, but it was.
I was just like, this is stupid. And, and I remember there being, you know, like articles and controversy and it was like, you know, should we or shouldn't we? And I was like, this is so dumb. Yeah. And yet, it maybe at that point in my life, you know, it was just like, this is beyond my understanding. I know there's a long history of it. At that point, I didn't understand that if you went far enough back in history, you would find female ministers.
But
Christians do it, but Catholics don't. And it just had to be something where I'm like, if I'm going to grow in my faith and still embrace the church that I'm part of, I've got to chuck that in the fuck it bucket and like, move on. Mm-hmm. You know, like I can't get hung up on it. But still, you know, as I've moved through life, I try and find ways to advocate for it in my own way or talk about it or grapple with it. But yeah, that's the first thing that I remember.
First in the fuck it bucket. I mean, you really made me pause because I think I also had those thoughts, but like didn't even process them. Because I was raised in a pretty like feminist household. And, like I said, we weren't like super churchy. So I don't think that that maybe something I had thought of too quickly. But the first thing I really had to be like, fuck this, was putting like people, and I mean like priests and people in authority on pedestals.
Yeah.
Like that went out the window pretty early.
Well, yeah. I mean, we grew up in the generation of people that had to disavow ourselves of any kind of like the priests have a special place, right?
That's the thing that I was like, that's bunk. Like right out the gate. And I have like disclaimer or like full disclosure, like I have priests who I am good friends with, who I love and respect. Just like I have people of every other vocation who I love and respect. And just like every other vocation, people I think are ridiculous and awful and, you know, all the bad things too. So I'm not running priests down necessarily. I'm just saying that that was the thing I had to learn was that like that is not the be all end all. Like don't put people, especially people in authority, on pedestals.
Yeah. Well,
God is God and everybody else is just everybody else.
Yeah. And I think what we have seen, you know, amongst our group of peers, you know, having grown up in the time that we did in the church, is that people who didn't, who were either unable or unwilling, you know, and if you were unable or unwilling to hold those two things in tension, right? This is my church and priests have a special role in the church, but they are not above reproach and they're people just like everybody else. And if they do something wrong, that is something wrong, right? Like to be able to hold those two things in tension and still go to mass on Sunday for some people was understandably impossible.
Yeah. That's a jump. That's kind of hard to make. Yeah. Although for me, it was not impossible to make, but that was something I was like, you put that in the fuck it bucket. Like, people in authority, priests in the church are not better than anybody else.
Exactly.
And honestly, it's not fair to them to think that they are.
It's not.
It's not fair to anybody.
Yeah. So I think that is kind of like a defining characteristic of the people who are left, like the leftovers
from the scandal years. That might not be like a that's an obvious one, I guess, but no. It really does stick out to me.
Yeah,
I
absolutely.
Thought, that was like, I can't think of anything else that I was like, yeah, fuck that.
Well, and that was a big one, right? Like, that was a big...
Sure, it's a formative one.
Formative obstacle for us to be able to overcome and still look at it and say we're Catholic. Even though a lot of people that are still around would probably look at us and be like, you guys are not Catholic enough
totally
to be in the
are.
Club. But that goes in the fuck it bucket as well.
Yeah, you know, fuck them also. I go to mass. I get my cracker. Okay. This is the one that we really
Oh, that's the
liked.
One that you really wanted. Okay.
Oh,
go
that's
for
the
it.
One that you
last
really
one.
Wanted.
This will be our last one.
Guess wrote this one, but I helped him think about it. First, fiat.
Mm.
Oh, Latin.
Did we just drop Latin on church drunk?
My skin is singed. What's a fiat?
What's a fiat? Fix it again, Tony. First fiat.
Ass.
So it's the first. Describe this. Like, what did you have in mind when we were
so,
putting this one in the bowl?
Well, I'm thinking like first yes or first affirmation.
Yes. So the
first fiat means yes.
Means yes.
And
means,
usually it's Mary's yes if we're talking
right.
churchy language.
Mary had essentially the first fiat in the Catholic tradition, so to speak, because you know when the angel came
she
and
gave
said,
consent.
"Here's the deal." You're going to be the mother of the Savior
yes.
of the world and the child of God and all that. And she was like, let it
yes.
be. Let it be done. Right?
Right.
So,
but for this, I was thinking kind of reverse of what we just talked about, like your fuck it bucket. Like,
right.
what's your first, like, yeah, like, this resonates with me.
Yeah, makes
and
sense.
This is something that keeps me in tune with
yeah.
it.
Well, and not just that, but you were kind of talking about the idea that you were not only doing it for yourself, but you were living
yes,
this life of ministry that like draws others into it where you're like,
I think that's the
oh,
first.
Oh shit, people are listening to what I say right now.
All
right,
like Gas and I have mentioned that we may or may not have influence or official roles or paychecks from
mm-hmm.
the Holy Roman Empire and church. But no, we don't have an emperor anymore. Anyway, just saying that there's a moment that comes when you're like, oh yeah, I'm all in.
Right.
And I may be influencing others.
Yeah.
And I actually really do believe and buy this.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
What's your first fiat?
Oh, I'm going first?
I don't have. No, you don't have to.
Well, I think my first fiat, there was kind of like a primary and a secondary. My first time where I said, yes, I'm in for like wherever this leads. Was when I was still pretty young, you know, and a couple folks had done things for me that made things make sense.
Mm-hmm,
and one of those things that made sense was this idea. Like somebody was saying, you know, to this guy who was kind of doing his ministry thing, and they said, you know, how do you do what you do? And he's like, well, I don't, you know, like it's not really me kind of that's in control of this. Like,
mm-hmm.
Obviously I'm a part of it, my skills, my talents, but really this is not my work. This is not my job. I am just doing my best to keep up with whatever God has in store. And there was kind of a light bulb moment where it was like, okay, well, if this guy who is just kind of, you know, someone who has been put into my life can do it, then maybe I can too. And that was the first time where I said, all right, like, let's see where that might lead.
Yeah.
The secondary was the time where I realized that I had actually, you know, not full-time employment, but I had collected checks from like four different Catholic schools over the course of my career. And I was like, holy shit, I've become like a Catholic school junkie of sorts, you know, like just stringing it out from one to the next. And there were some parishes in that mix as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, damn, like I'm a lifer. Like I have a career in ministry.
Dang.
And that was kind of a terrifying moment.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even think I think of it that way.
Yeah.
But it's true. For me, I think there were kind of two as well. Like the broader one is like when I realized like this is my community.
Yeah.
Like these are the people that I work with or that I volunteer with and that I'm truly my true self with. Like this is actually me.
Yeah.
So there's that identity piece. But then I think the biggest one that I remember hitting me is hearing somebody who I had like helped maybe inform, you know, form or grow, repeating things and like giving it their own spin and their own presentation or whatever and being like, oh, like I'm part of this in a way that is affecting other people's lives
right.
and what they're then passing on
to
their people. Like, that was kind of a, like, ooh, this shit is real moment.
The responsibility all of a sudden was increased, right?
Yeah, like, oh. And it was like, wow, like, that's real and has impacted somebody in a real way. And also, I like that. I love what it is.
Yeah.
So it was a good feeling, good one.
And it's I've always found that it's kind of cool, you know, like when you really stop and think about it, yes, there's a certain level of responsibility that comes with, like, you know, being all in on the ministry stuff. And some people will talk about it in very serious terms.
Yeah.
Like, we are saving souls.
Oh, God.
And we are you know, we are evangelizing, and that is the most critical work going on in the world. But I've always kind of found that, like, when I'm doing it right, it just kind of and granted, very rarely am I doing it right. But during those times, I'm just living my life. You know, like, I'm not really doing anything special. And people will come up to me later and be like, oh, do you remember when we talked about this or we said that or whatever? And I'll be like, no, like, I was just kind of living my life.
Right. You were being authentic.
But it's awesome that it can have an impact, you know, on those, like, again, like 99% of the time I'm doing it wrong, but the 1% of the time it's, you know, like, it's kind of cool.
Well, and I think that's the spirit, like, speaking back to you. You know, being like, all right, you got something right.
Keep walking.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah,
going. Stick with it.
Yeah.
All right, so that's some first about us. That's probably a good one to end that.
Yeah, totally. On, I think. And I think that's a little bit of, like, how we got to here. And now the big question is, like, why are we still here? Like, why would we?
And that was actually something that was, like, the driving impetus for Church Drunk.
Yes.
Was, like, we wanted to play with this idea of we are
survivors in a way.
Survivors, like, we would consider ourselves faithful. Like, it's important to us. It's something we talk about and think about and interact with a lot.
Yeah.
And also, we're kind of different in that we're willing to be a little abandoning with that. Like, how do we play with this idea?
The church is shrinking in our particular demographic, right?
Sure.
Like, there are not a lot of people that are our age, our ethnicity, our part of the world that are still showing up on Sundays. And the question that we kind of find ourselves asking over and over, and we know some wonderful people who are walking that path with us. We're not special.
We're not throwing any judgment on anybody.
But, and we have great friends who
that is part of our puzzlement, is like, how are we still here?
So why are we still doing here? Yeah, you know, and there was a lovely article that we'll talk a little bit about at the end that kind of sparked that for us recently to be like, why are we here? And maybe we should, you know, just kind of give that some thought and maybe share it. And we thought it'd be a nice way to close out sort of season two again, in quotation marks. But
I mean, I think that was part of the reason why we wanted to talk about this, is that we don't see a lot of people like us, but maybe there's somebody else out there who is like us a little bit.
Totally.
Who has these similar feelings.
Everybody. Yeah. Like, and it's not just like if you're still, you know, going to church on Sunday or even if it's like an Easter Christmas thing, or if it's, you know, something that is part of your past not part of your present, but it still is, like, necessarily, it gets woven into you pretty easily, right?
Yeah,
like,
religion is a cultural thing. The taglines that we actually played around with was, like, the inescapable pull.
Yeah.
And that was one that I didn't necessarily, like, I like what we picked, but, like, that is how we feel.
Just when you think that you're, like, out and ready to move on, it pulls you back in. Yeah, totally.
But it's true. I mean, and so maybe the others who feel that way. That's the only way I can be authentic about it.
Yeah.
Because it's hard.
Right.
You know, we struggle with various things that hasn't been apparent.
Totally. Yeah.
So why are we still here?
Why are we still here? That's the question that we're going to kind of end our season on, and we'll each have a chance to kind of.
And we would absolutely love to hear why you are still here.
Totally.
Like, here in the broadest sense of the Catholic faith, or why you're not.
Right.
Like, that's cool too.
Yeah.
I mean, for you, we don't know how we could get out. We're stuck.
We're stuck.
That's the thing.
We're lifers.
But
we
do
that.
Have each other and a few others.
It helps.
Yeah.
It helps to have a partner. Yeah.
Totally.
Or a community. It's necessary. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And actually, that was one of the things that I did list is why I'm still here.
Go ahead.
Is having a community.
Yeah.
We were lucky in that we did find a community early on, and quite a few are still sort of in touch at different stages, like, not identical, not homogenous or anything, but that community was the church alive for me.
Yeah.
And I can't reject that or forget that.
Yeah.
Like, community means a lot.
Yeah, I think finding people, wherever you find people that you can call family, who are not actually blood family to you, you're going to stick with that for a long time, you know? And some people find it in religion. Some people find it in, like sports teams.
Right.
And that is their family for life.
Yeah.
Some people find it in any variety of areas, you know, like, where you find community and where you find a sense of familial connection.
Yeah.
You're going to be locked into that for a long time.
Well, and I think for me, what I realized was that as I got older, that I just sort of took it for granted. That's how everybody's, like, community of friends was. Right. And I realized, like, oh, no, like, mine has a deeper level of, like, trust and, like, non-judgment toward one another that is unusual.
Yeah.
Like, I might be embarrassed about something, but I knew that that community was unconditional to me.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty powerful.
Totally. Yeah. I think, for me, the reason that I find myself still here and find myself kind of constantly going back to the church that I grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask myself a lot, you know, like, am I still only here because it's what I grew up with?
Right.
You know?
Programming.
And is it, and that basically would boil down to like, am I really only still Catholic because that's what my parents want me to be? You
right,
know?
Right, right.
And I've grappled with that question at times. Mm-hmm. You know, I actually postponed my confirmation for a year.
Yeah.
Because my parents weren't going to be there. They had something else that was going to keep them away for the weekend of confirmation. And so I waited a year and I took that whole year to be like, if it's so important for me to have my parents there, am I really claiming this, you know, for myself?
Yeah.
So it's like something that I kind of have thought about a lot. But what I find is that the Catholic way of viewing the world is one that connects me more with the world. And I look at a lot of other faith traditions, and it's about removing yourself from the world, you know, like even within the Christian faith tradition, but also, you know, like the Buddhist idea of just kind of the disconnectedness is letting go of things that will cause suffering and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to dig into the world with, like, both hands and experience what it has to offer. And I think that the sacramental nature of the church and the way that they, you know, like, and the Jesuit idea of finding God in all things that we talk about a lot, like, it encourages you to go out and live your life in this world. Jesus came and lived his life in this world so that we would have a model of what it is to live that fully, you know, like, not living in black and white, but living in full color kind of life.
No.
And that's important to me.
Yeah, I love that you say that, and I love that about the church, too, that it is about this world. It is sacramental, that, like, this stuff matters, too.
Right.
You know, and I think that's one of the favorite things is the both and. Like, this physical world, these physical bodies, this physical creation is so sensory and so beautiful, and that is a source of holiness to us, and it's also the source of some of our destruction and sinfulness. But they're both so intense and so present, and that can be a pathway to faith, like I wouldn't want to lose that.
Right.
I don't think it's I don't think it's an illusion. I don't think it's wrong to be entranced and in love with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think for me also, it's, you know, like, this world is wonderful and beautiful, and I want to be connected with it. And it's also super fucked up. Like,
yeah.
The world
can't
is
wait to get off of it.
Right. Like it's a terrible place in its own right. And at the same time, it's a beautiful place. And I think that leads me kind of to, like, my second idea that I really love about the church is that, like, you know, you learn how to hold those two things together in balance.
Right.
That, you know, like, we are all beautiful, fucked up creatures.
Right.
And that there is, because of that, a necessary path to forgiveness. And that's the next thing. Like, the second thing that I just really love about the church is the idea that we have been forgiven before we have even fucked up, because God knows that that's who we are. Like, and we're not supposed to escape from that. We're supposed to do the best we can with that condition.
Yeah.
But it was, as I was thinking about, like, the whole why we stay thing, it reminded me of a story that comes from, like, the early desert fathers of the church, like the hermits.
Okay.
And I read it first in this book by Henry Nouwen, The Way of the Heart, that talks about the desert fathers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the story of this hermit there's a community of hermits, if that makes sense.
Sure.
You know, but they all, like, you know, one of the brothers from this community, and they all kind of have their own little hermit huts, I guess. I don't know, because they want to live in isolation. But one of them has done something wrong, and he's essentially going to be judged by the community. And so they summon this elder, Abba Moses from his hermitage, and they say, come to this committee meeting, and we're going to judge this brother who's done something wrong. And Moses fills up his jug with a leaky jug with water. And he kind of goes, all right, fine. And he sort of grumbles about it. And he walks to the meeting, leaking water behind him as he goes. And he shows up and everybody's like, what the hell are you doing? And he says, my sins trail out behind me, and yet I don't see them. and now I'm here to judge the sins of another.
Yeah.
And everybody just kind of like stops and walks away. Like, forgiveness is built into the fabric of who we are because our status in the world as beautiful, fucked up creatures is built into who we are.
Yeah. I mean, it's that both and. And yeah. I mean, that's the other thing too that I was going to mention was like the hope of it, mm-hmm. the audacious hope of it is, you know, because they're as beautiful as the world is. There's so much suffering and it's overwhelming. And for me, I want to hope.
Right.
You know, and the church does offer that. Like, in the worst and the darkest night, that is the hope of Christianity, is life after death. And I think that's trite to say, like, where I was like, oh, like, that's resurrection, right. Like heaven.
Right.
But really, when you see horrors,
yeah.
I'm like, I don't know how this could possibly be fixed. And so I must have hope that there is someone so different from us,
yeah.
who is authoring this story to have the different ending. Yeah. And just to, you know, go back around to Lewis, I remember reading The Last Battle from the last of the Narnia books.
Yeah.
And Lewis has this great description of heaven where he's like, you know, the life you've been living is the cover of a book whose great story nobody on earth has read.
Right.
You know, and there's this new world coming with all the same loves we have here, but different.
Yeah.
You know? And I want that hope.
It's waiting in joyful hope. We say it all the time, but do we pull it off?
I mean, it's the only thing that gets us through our righteousness, let's be honest.
It is. Like, it's a coping mechanism, its own way. Yeah.
And I don't care if it's wrong or if it's too innocent or naive. Like, there is a hope we can think of.
It's a choice.
Yeah, you have to choose it.
It's a choice.
Or you don't have to, right. But I have to.
I think I have empathy and understanding for people who would look at the world and say, I can't have that sense of joyful hope. Like, I get it. And yet, it is a choice, you know?
Right. And that is not to say that I believe that, like, that absolves us of, like, trying.
Absolutely.
Like,
not.
We are required to try. Like, I fully believe that. Like, you do your best right here. But I do have hope. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's us.
Hey.
That's why we stay. That's how we got to here. And that is season 2 of Church Drunk.
Oh my gosh. Let us know. Why do you stay? Why did you leave?
Yeah.
Are you coming back?
So our inspiration for this was actually this beautiful article written by Brian Doyle, who
passed away this year.
Away this year. He was a writer from Portland, and he just wrote some beautiful stuff. And we came across this article that he wrote about how he learned to speak Catholic. Mm-hmm. Like, that is his language that he communicates with the world with. But he's also a secular writer, so he didn't just write Catholic stuff.
Right.
Everything kind of had this spiritual infusion for him. But I just recently read Martin, his book about a pine marten on Mount Hood. And it's a great read. But we'll link the article that kind of inspired this in the blog. It's just beautiful writing, and it gives you a little sense of, like, where your Catholic compass should be, you know, if you're doing it in the right way.
Yeah, it's a great example of, like, how your compass can kind of be all over the place, and yet here you are.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of embracing the identity that you have.
Yeah. So cheers to Brian Doyle for giving us inspiration and helping us through our end of season 2 here. And like we said, we'll send the article out. You guys send us feedback, email us.
Yeah.
Tweet us.
A star or two would be great.
Yeah, give us a little review on iTunes so it doesn't look like we're just lonely.
It's fine though. We're probably coming back anyway. We just like to hear ourselves talk. It's great.
I know. Yeah. It's entertaining for us. If you're still listening, well, God bless you.
Yep.
So yeah, we'll be back in a few weeks with maybe a mystery bonus episode.
Oh my gosh. Who knows? I can't stay away from the ghosties. Yeah. We'll be back.
And then look for us during Advent, because we are just gluttons for punishment.
Yep.
In addition to that, church drunk. The drunkard's walk may be long and winding, but it will indeed always lead you home.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Take care.